Hey, Colin.
Yeah, Cadence.
Do you like media and entertainment that's badass?
Duh.
Do you like media and entertainment that's bitchin'?
Yeah.
And how about a little bonkers?
Hills, yeah, throw that in there.
Then I think you might like this thing called the Baywatch Rewatch.
Oh, God. Are you trying to promote the podcast I'm actively doing with you right now?
A little bit. Is it working?
Cool intro. All right. Well,
let's get started.
Get into it, guys. Hey, everybody.
It's Colin. Oh. You get a new one.
I know. I tried to do a new one because I was like, hi, everybody.
Are you Del Toro? Is that you, Victor?
Hi, everybody. You got a bad hair day. Colin here and...
Cadence. I don't know if you've met me. I don't know if I've introduced myself
that, like,
every single
Cadence.
Time.
I'm here.
Here. Present.
Today we're going to be reviewing episodes 5 and 6 of Pacific Blue, season 1. Yeah, there's a lot going on, so we're definitely trying to get you the best stuff. Last episode, we dealt with some pretty intense stuff, some racial, we dealt with our neo-Nazis and racial tensions. We would like to do another disclaimer today, that we will, again, we never make fun of race, sexual assault, anything like that, because these are all real police things that happen.
Never the subject matter.
Never the subject matter. Stuff. We are solely telling the story and joking about the plot, the characters, and this TV show and how they chose to portray these things.
Yeah. It's usually like choices made by the writers, actors, wardrobe departments, and so on and so forth.
So just a disclaimer, we don't ever joke about that kind of stuff. That is not cool.
Okay, so this episode opens with the precinct having a clubhouse meeting. There is a huge issue in their neighborhood of a group of particular drug dealers who are in a specific, like on a specific corner. And they're trying to figure out what the best way to approach them and get them, you know, into custody is before they, because they've always been able to evade them. I mean, they talk so much game about how their bikes can go all the places other people can't
but
go.
They can't seem to get this drug dealing gang.
Cannot seem to chase these guys down, but whatever. So they're going to leverage what they're now calling, not the four-wheelers anymore, what they're now referring to as the black and whites. So the cars, the cops that drive the cars. They're going to use the, quote, black and whites to make the drug dealers run. So they're going to pull around. They're going to scare them. And then when they run off, that's when the
scatter like little cockroaches. And
so
then they're
as soon as that happens,
there.
The bike cops are lying in wait. And that's when they're going to pounce.
I wonder what they call that in police world. The old black and white lion.
Cat and mouse.
The old cat and mouse. I know I was trying to think of a
clever word.
The old
milk and cookies.
The old milk and cookies. Get them on this one, Del Toro.
And here's... This is just a passing note, but one of my favorite things is one of the bike cops literally uses, actually in the most literal way, uses one of the cop cars to catch a bad guy by using it as a ramp.
Oh, and so
he
many
ramps
other things.
Over it.
I took the videos. We're ready to post it. I just can't wait to show you guys
how
amazing
this one is. Oh, there's some primo bike stuff happening. So, point being, they... herd basically like cattle dogs, you know how they like herd the cows or whatever, like all the bike cops herd the drug dealers into this like construction zone.
Damn, here we go again,
where there's like big bulldozers and like construction equipment.
Classic.
Oh, just classic
caterpillar or cat. I'm just gonna keep saying that the main construction site is
right,
or cat. I don't know. Well, you know
I think it's cat. One of the drug dealers has hidden behind one of these bulldozers, and Corey is trying to get him to come out. He comes peeking around the bulldozer.
Freeze, please.
And Corey shoots him.
Oh, she does not think twice.
Does not hesitate even a little bit. The issue is, when he hits the ground, because he doesn't die. Luckily, he does not die.
God, yes, Corey, don't want that on your shoulders.
But they can't find a gun. And so they are going to hold a police inquiry based on whether or not she has used excessive force on this particular victim. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. Okay, so every last one of the drug dealers is black. Every last one of them.
Yeah,
it's every sad, guys. Last one of them. And you can tell the Pacific Blue noticed they might have had an issue with representation, because all of a sudden you meet a cop that you have never met before, a lieutenant slash detective, so not someone riding the bike, like a little bit higher up in the food chain. He's also black. So they only bring in this higher on the food chain black
that
detective.
That we've never seen before.
That we've never met. We haven't seen him since.
Don't know anything about him.
To be the lead on this drug deal slash gang situation. So
they're trying, bless their hearts.
You can tell the wheels were turning. They were a little bit like, you know what? This may not look so great, especially because we just did a whole episode on racism and how socioeconomic class is more of the issue than race. But whatever.
There's a lot of them too, and not one.
Not one. Here's the other side note about this guy that she kills. His name is, or shoots, not kills, heaven forbid. No. She did not kill him. She shot him. His name is Rashid. He is also a rapper.
And boy, is he a good one. We might get a little taste of what he has to come up with later.
He is a rapper in the loosest term.
And so the most of this episode is, just her dealing. Because again, McNamara comes from a long line of Irish cops. Dad cop, grandpa cop, great grandpa cop. Just
big time.
Copping
big
on the Titanic. Time. And another...
They came over as cops on the Titanic.
So she's kind of... We get a little bit of character development for Corey. But we also have a fun little subplot going on. And
this is probably my favorite subplot we've covered thus far.
So it also starts with our little bike whisper, Elvis. He's in the back at the firehouse / police officer station. And these total gangster guys walk in. Trench coats, slicked back hair. And they've got this thick Eastern European accent. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to figure out where Elvis is from. This might give us a clue.
Excuse me. We are seeking Elvis Krzyzewski.
I gotta go. And who shall I say is seeking?
Just tell him we are friends from old country. Here catching rays in Santa Monica. Please, it's most important that we speak to him.
And they're like, and the best part is Elvis peeks around the corner.
Literally makes eye contact with them.
Full sight. And then TC looks behind, makes eye contact a good 10 or 15 seconds.
They stare at each other.
TC turns around, he's like, I haven't seen him. And they're like, oh, God, he was there. We literally
just
watched
him. You mean Elvis that we were literally looking, you guys make eye contact?
Yeah, we all just watched him. So they like try to bust by.
Elvis! Elvis, Jesse!
Whoa, Elvis. Guys. Hey, guys.
Hold on. Elvis!
Guys, excuse me. Elvis! Excuse me, guys.
They kind of move TC out of the way. They're going and peeping around. They can't find Elvis.
Like I said, he's not here. But I'll be happy to give him a message for you if you like. Message.
And you're automatically led to believe that these are like people that want to hurt Elvis.
Because right.
Obviously he's hiding.
They
obviously
are.
He does not want to talk to him. We're getting a little into Elvis's backstory too. And maybe like a hint of where he's from.
Perhaps we'll get a little taste. Okay. So what I was actually referring to as my favorite, because I forgot that Elvis's thing happened.
How could you forget that Elvis's thing?
Because my brain was on a little someone named Scott Magruder. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes.
That's why.
So there's another plot with Scott Magruder.
All right. I need a couple volunteers for Brat Patrol duty.
Brat Patrol duty?
Yeah, it means we have a film company working on the beach. They bring a lot of money into the community, so we're encouraged by City Hall to provide liaison assistance.
It's babysitting the star. Who's it this time?
Scott Magruder.
So Chris Kelly and Victor Del Toro get assigned as the liaisons for the movie set. Chris Kelly's like, I mean, I don't know much about him, but he seems like a really hot movie star.
Oh, then Del Toro's face. Victor Del Toro, he looks at her and he's like,
hey, Scott Magruder's a full-fledged high-signing poser. He tore up a hotel room in New York City, and he got in a fist fight in Central Park with his caterer.
He slapped a man one time. He punched someone in the face. Like,
he ruined
like
a hotel
action
room.
Star. Yeah, like he's listing all these crazy facts about him, and she's like, okay, clearly you do.
Okay, clearly and this you know is a little all about Scott Magruder, but... Hey,
Victor Del Toro, you know everything about him, and your little glint in your eye is sparkling. And this, again... I just would love it if he was gay, but you'd pick up on these little vibes that he maybe likes Scott Magruder a little too much, maybe?
Yeah, he's very passionate about it.
He's got a call in Jason Momoa just like when he found out he's gay.
Oh,
like,
tell me more about Scott Magruder.
I just want to get to know him more. Like, what is going on with him?
So they report to set and they immediately go to Scott Magruder's trailer.
What? Who are you? Why just like that?
I'm Officer Kelly. This is Officer Del Toro, and we've been assigned as liaison officers while you're filming here on the beach.
You're a cop?
Yes.
Real cop with a gun, real bolts and everything?
Right here.
You know, I'm always concerned when I'm on location out in public. Maybe we should discuss some sort of security arrangements. Come on in. Come inside. You know what? It's very small in here. I'd really appreciate it if you could guard the perimeter while I talk to your partner, Officer Del Taco.
Hey, it's Del Toro.
Whatever.
Actually, we both need to check out the set, make sure all crowd control measures are in place.
Okay. All right. I see my reputation has preceded me. You two, run along. I've got to get ready for a scene. Catch up with you later, baby.
First of all, Scott Magruder's a douche, and he's not that handsome. Let's just get that out of the way.
All right, so Victor Del Toro and Chris Kelly are at the set, and they're meeting Magruder.
I know. I could not stop laughing that it was Magruder. It's Magruder with a D, by the way. Sounds exactly like Magruber with a B, which is the greatest comedy
cadence
known
loves
to man.
Magruber, you guys.
Magruder.
Our Scott Magruder. Okay, also, let me just tell you, you might be wondering what the F movie they're filming. Oh, I'll tell you what the F movie they're filming. Scott Magruder is being paid $5 million buckaroos to be Amphibaman.
it was like the 90s version of Aquaman, but kind of like they didn't have the
not
budget.
Cute.
The
he's wearing a wetsuit. He's literally just wearing a wetsuit. Nothing is happening. But it's like he's being like, I can't emphasize enough what a bitch he's
being. Yeah, he's being like a total diva, you guys. He's acting like he is the king of all
he's
things
screaming
movies,
at everybody
yelling he wanted to do his own stunts, he doesn't want people to touch him, don't take pictures, just being a total like a diva.
Yelling at the director,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
An absolute just nightmare. Jerk. So he's insisting that he does his own stunts and the director's like,
you sure you want to do that?
I don't think that's a great idea. He's like,
I have a hearing problem, I'm doing the stunt myself,
you're treating me like a child, just let me do it. So he lets him do it, and of course Scott Magruder biffs it.
Cut.
Of course, he can't execute the stunt.
He tries to do a dive off a pier into the water. Belly flops onto the sand, y'all. That would hurt.
Belly
your ribs
flops.
Would be like, your ribs.
You would crack some ribs,
yeah, for sure.
And Del Toro's just standing off to the side.
I can't remember when I've been so impressed. How about you?
Giggling like a schoolgirl.
Del Toro just loves him. You guys, I'm telling you, this is where we have a little bit of
such
an inkling that Del Toro is a little bit gay for Magruder.
Oh. Not a little bit, like at least 50-50.
Oh, 50.
At the very least, he's
questioning.
So, in the middle of Scott kind of just absolutely being a nightmare to work with, he fires an extra. And they're like, we got to shoot this today, bud. So he immediately turns to Victor Del Toro and he's like,
Del Toro, you ever done any acting before?
No.
Do me a favor. Say this line right here.
Forget it.
Say the words, freeze, Turkey.
Who writes this stuff?
Look, you say the lines, I hold back the mob that's dying to see you. He's got attitude. It's perfect.
I'm on duty.
He's unavailable for the part.
I love it.
No. Pass. Nada. I'm not interested in doing any movie, much less your movie.
Del Toro's like, would not do this for the $1 million. He's like,
he pays $524 for the day.
Well, would you do it for $542? And he's like, absolutely, put me in.
Freeze, Turkey!
Wouldn't do it for a million, but 540.
542.
You got
you're
my
there.
Attention.
The reason that this is important is because of this brief moment of glory that Del Toro gets on screen.
Yeah, he's like secretly like, no, I won't do it, but secretly, I mean, obviously wants
to do
Chris,
it. He tells Chris,
better keep Oscar night open, babe.
That's what he tells
her.
He's
already planning his debut.
Yes.
He's got his.
Yes.
His little Tom Ford suit ready.
He's
ready to go to Oscars.
So better than this, but right when he's in the mix,
and
he
I'm sorry,
loses his head.
Del Toro's obsessed with this movie star,
right?
Obviously, as we learned from the beginning.
Right.
And this movie star then asks him to be in his movie.
Right.
And he's like, no.
He's playing hard to get.
Oh, duh.
Obs.
Duh, he's playing
Do
those
you
games.
Not know the basics?
Del Toro, just be honest with your feelings.
Okay, so because he feels like such fancy schmancy pants for being able to say freeze turkey on screen, he gets to go to like a rap party, essentially, like at a bar and grill.
I know, a big celebrity rap party, and it's literally at the trashiest bar. It's almost
very
like a
weird.
Strip. It's almost like a strip club.
There's pool tables. There's
and
also
really hot women in skimpy clothes and like smoking and dark lights. It's weird.
So they're having this party here, and Del Toro is like chatting up everyone left and right. Like,
actually, it's a pretty good experience. You can't find anybody. Since I'm a real cop, I told him, hey, look.
Talking about his experience as an extra.
He really let that go to his little gay head.
He really, truly did. But because he got too close and up close and personal and did not let his job stay separate.
Guess what happened? MacGruder. This man comes up to him and says the most bizarre thing out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Kaden's are dying. He's like,
he thinks he is too good for me. Well, maybe I'm not the kind of quality guy that you meet in rehab.
Hey, I guess I'm not the stand-up type of guy that you meet in rehab.
And we're like, what the fuck does rehab have to do with any of this? What is happening? And then
There's no pretext. There's nothing.
Yeah, and so
what the hell does that even
MacGruder
mean?
Oh, it pushed his buttons for sure, though, because MacGruder's like, you want to go? You want to go? And he breaks a pull stick over his leg and just goes nuts. Like, it was like a trigger for him. Obviously, MacGruder's been through a lot, and maybe he had some
obviously
past
there's
trauma.
Like some trigger happening for him emotionally. Why are you making people who go to rehab seem like criminals, like bullies?
It
like
would have made more sense
guys?
If it was someone from his past, like, oh, you were too cool for me in high school,
right.
Or like, oh, you ditched me
were
in
you,
college.
What if it was the extra he fired previously in the episode? That would have made way more. I could have used that $542, MacGruder.
Yep, just a random dude that I guess
but
maybe he
no.
went to rehab with.
And
we
how
still
did
don't
he
know.
Track him down? Like, it's so stupid. There's no conflict of anything that happened in rehab. Mm-mm. Nothing. Mm-mm. He's just, it's so weird. So anyway. Because Del Toro has become too close to the job, so to speak, he's not paying attention when this happens.
Because he's supposed to kind of be his bodyguard.
Because,
a bit,
yeah, they're supposed to be protecting,
yeah,
him.
Protecting him.
So after. At that moment, he comes over to put out the fight, and he finds just the right position to get
you
in.
Guys, full butt to groin.
MacGruber's thrusting.
MacGruder's butt is out.
Right into MacGruder's ass.
And Victor Del Toro's got his crotch right on there. And he's kind of groping him from under.
And he's making a face of like.
And then the paparazzi comes, catches that exact moment.
So basically, the one thing they were assigned to do, they failed at doing.
Next day. We just want to bring you guys back to Elvis and his little situation, because as we remember...
Don't forget, he's being hunted.
He's being hunted by these Eastern European mobsters, and nobody knows why. So they came in to look for him, like we said in the beginning, in their long black trench coats, hair slicked back. So Elvis is out buying, as one does, buying postcards and magnets at
on
a trinket
the,
shop
on the
at a boardwalk.
When I live somewhere where a lot of tourists go and overpay for mm-hmm, items, mm-hmm. and I'm a local, I like to go, just so I feel like a tourist,
I
go to those
Fisherman's
same
Pier.
Spots.
I go to Fisherman's Pier always buy.
Overpay for everything.
Mm-hmm, postcards, magnets, mm-hmm. little shot glasses.
Yeah.
I love doing that. Just to, A, you want people, when people walk into your house, you want them to know.
This is where
this
you
is
are.
Where you are.
For sure.
So you always have to buy things that mm-hmm. from your city. It makes only sense. Everyone does that.
Right.
So Elvis is looking through, perusing the little articles and little trinkets, and the mobsters come up. You guys, they couldn't find him. So guess what they decided to do? Just have themselves a boys' trip.
Take a bike ride on the pier.
Bike riding in the most fluorescent, different, beautiful colors.
Neon jumpsuits.
Their hair's like free. They've got sunglasses. They're like giggling. Literally three grown men riding side by side on bikes, just like laughing, going down the pier. And Elvis is like, oh shit, they're going to see me. So he makes a ridiculous hide again. And so you're really just like,
wait. He makes a ridiculous hide while wearing a full head-to-toe CIA costume.
Yeah, we don't know where that came from. We don't know how he thought that was a good idea.
Stuff that's a CIA from head-to-toe is way more attention-seeking.
Yeah, don't bring attention to yourself. Elvis, nice, but you did. But it's just funny because they're having a boys trip. They totally don't even
see it.
They
don't look threatening at all.
Yeah, they don't
not
look threatening
even the
at all.
Slightest.
They just drive by. So we're just bringing you back because he's basically still being hunted is right. What we're trying to say. All right, so we're back at the Firehouse Police Station.
And we have Anthony Palermo, our lovable guy in charge, our lieutenant. And he's got Corey McNamara in his office. But not only is she in there, there's also a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And the lawyer is the lawyer of the person that she shot.
You want to sue this department for excessive force? And you're demanding that we suspend Officer McNamara?
Lawsuit is for $10 million. I just got back from the city attorney's office.
That's absurd. You're just looking for a fat settlement from the city.
Now, my client, Rashid Ross, very talented rap musician. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's
not only did you shoot this guy and he's claiming that he was completely defenseless and used excessive force, he's also a rapper and a darn good one at that. She's like, look, I swear on my life he had a gun. I promise he was flashing me a gun. It was self-defense.
And
I
they say,
your client is a convicted armed robber.
As a juvenile.
Prosecuted special circumstances. Spent 5 years in prison.
And then returned to the neighborhood. Rehabilitated by the state of California.
He was selling cocaine on Bellwood Avenue.
He was performing for friends. But he became a victim of excessive force by an officer with 3 years experience, someone in your department.
And they're like, well, that might be true, but now he's a rapper and he's making all of his money rapping. So why on earth would he need to be robbing anyone or selling drugs? He wouldn't need to be.
Yeah, because he's rapping.
Because he's
Everyone
rapping.
Everyone knows that if you're rapping, you're so tied up rapping those lyrics that you don't have time to do anything, any kind of criminal activity.
And so basically Corey's like, I know I saw a gun. And he is already a convicted violent felon. So my guess is on the gun. And they say, well, you know what? You can't prove it. And until you can, like, you don't have a case.
Well, guess what she's going to do? She grabs old TC and she's like, let's go back to the scene it all happened. She goes back with TC to the spot of the crime, which is this old, like, you know,
construction site, wherever the hell they are.
And they just cannot find a gun. They're looking like, we're in throwing distance, in barrels of diggers. Cannot do it.
Yeah, they're looking at all the equipment. They're looking in trees. They're looking under rocks. They're like, he had to have at least thrown it somewhere. I know he had it. So their goal is obviously to find the gun in order to prove that she did not use excessive force and that she saw the gun.
And no one else saw it, by the way. TC has no idea. He's just trusting her because they're
yes,
coworkers.
Yes, very much. So another important thing happens after this scene that's in relation to Corey. She is alone with TC and... First of all, this is not the important part, but he calls her kiddo.
You okay, kiddo?
I hate
Gross.
That. Could you imagine being called kiddo?
If you are a man, please, I beg of you, do not call your women equal coworkers kiddos. You might think it sounds endearing, but it sounds
you can
condescending
call them
as
tigers.
Hell.
Hey there, tiger. Hey there, big guy.
I mean, tigers.
Hey there, big guy. Hey there, tiger. Hey.
Little guy.
Hey, how's it going? No, I'm just kidding. Don't call them any of those.
Just call them by their name. How about that? Oh, Timothy Chalamet can call me by my name.
Oh, God. We're all about that until someone that you're attracted, a 20-year-old that you're attracted to would
no,
call you
not.
Anything. If he called you kiddo, you'd be like, yeah.
What is it? I was literally
call me
just
a goat
saying,
because
like,
I'm a kid.
Call me a goat because
oh,
I'm
my,
a kid.
I tried to do my goat noise and it was. You
call
get it.
Me a goat because I'm a kid.
Call me Billy because I'm the kid.
Ooh, that was better. That was better. Oh, Timothy Chalamet, call me. So moving forward. Don't call your coworkers kiddo. The point is that in this moment of vulnerability, she says,
you're the only one in your family that's a police officer, right, TC?
Yeah, by a long shot.
Well, in my family, it's very important that your first shoot be a clean one.
Come on, Corey.
No, I'm serious. It goes back 3 generations. The tradition says a clean first shoot will give you the confidence you need to operate. A bad first shoot and you're useless on the street. You'll always hesitate. You'll always second guess yourself.
That's what they believe. What do you believe?
I don't know. All I know is that ever since this thing went down, my nerves have been shot to hell.
The point is at the end, as she says, I grew up hearing about these clean shoots. And the truth is, TC, like, I don't know if I saw a gun. I don't know. I could be wrong, doubting my own eyeballs. Mm. So it's really starting to wear Corey down to
Don't
the point that she starts
yourself,
having
Corey.
Nightmares about it.
You know what you saw. Don't doubt yourself.
Girl.
Kiddo. You know what you saw. Get out of there. Get down those nightmares, tiger. Get out.
Just giving her a little head, like a little noogie.
Yeah, like
you know what you saw, little guy.
back at the station with Corey and TC.
And Lieutenant Palermo.
And Lieutenant Palermo. We have now learned that there was a witness to right. Corey's shot, her clean shot.
Well, right. So maybe. The police station essentially has their shot. Own lawyer. And their lawyer, in the process of the inquiry, has found a witness who was there at the shootout, and he has a little bit of pertinent information, which is...
It was a .38 with a cool-looking handle. He was bragging that he ripped it from some guy's house off of Bellwood Avenue that he broke into.
How long ago was that?
A couple of weeks.
That's better. Now tell us what he did with the thing.
Storm drain.
He threw it down a storm drain.
No, I threw it down there for him.
Rapper that you shot did have a gun, and he threw it into the drain, the gutter drain.
The gutter, yep.
The canal, which takes all things go to the ocean, and they're like, oh, not all things are going to make it to this ocean.
Yeah,
and
Palermo's like, you know what? It doesn't always get to the ocean, and let's go check.
Yeah, so the three of them, TC, Palermo, and Corey, they're going to go find that gun. And guess what?
They do.
They do.
They find it.
Mm-hmm. But in between this... Corey is asking herself a lot of questions. She's
having a hard time. Because like we said, yeah. She realizes, like, did I see a gun? Am I making this mm-hmm. up?
And she goes through this kind of like Moana ancestral journey thing. Mm-hmm.
To be shocks
like,
to her grandfather.
My grandpa did this. And she's like seeking knowledge from the elders.
Oh, wait, you know what? We forgot to mention something in the ancestral journey that's incredibly important. She takes a long walk with her Irish grandfather. He says, she goes, I'm just so embarrassed that my first shoot wasn't a clean one. He goes...
Didn't go down clean.
Wait a minute, I thought...
That's why he's so hard on you.
But the Gardner incident...
was a mess. I'll tell you something else. This whole tradition about first shoots, that is a lot of Irish macho hero crap.
First was a clean shot? No. You think Bermuda was a clean shot? No. You think Philly? And he goes through all these things.
And he goes, your dad's first was not a clean shot. It was a mess. And she's like, are you... kidding me right now.
So that makes her feel a little better.
Mm-hmm. So they've been perpetuating this myth this whole time that she's been wearing her down. But the reality is no one's perfect. They're just doing their job the best they can.
I can't wait to have a problem and seek my elder, like the knowledge of my past elders.
Do we have any?
I don't think so, but...
Do we have any past
Granny
elders?
Comes down. It's just because that's just something I want to check off my bucket list. So the next day, between that time, they go and they find the gun. And they are... It's a beautiful gun, by the way.
Beautiful.
I'm not obviously a gun person, but it's like gold, like rose gold.
Corey, she doesn't want anybody to notify the rapper that she found the gun. She wants to do it. So she rides her bike down like the little badass that she is. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, recognize this? Holds up the bag with the gun mm-hmm. in it like this is not at all police procedure. This is not how this would
Again,
go, but whatever.
I don't think this is police procedure at all. I don't think you would do that.
And she's like, your fingerprints are all over this, buddy boy. Three strikes, you're out. Oh, we also forgot.
Yeah, so this got us into, well, I don't know where you're going, but this also got us into a discussion about fingerprints.
Yes, because like, Baywatch Hawaiian Wedding.
Baywatch Hawaiian Wedding was the same thing. She pulled something out of the water and was like, fingerprint it. And then this gun has been in salt water for like, 2 or 3 days
mm-hmm.
and it's like what is going on with fingerprints.
I was gonna say there was like that really brief side note that happened where the witness is in the police station and Lieutenant Palermo's like,
yeah, well, you're gonna fry, pal. We're gonna see to it. You think this is an act? I've been up to here with Bellwood Avenue, you guys selling poison the kids in dime bags. No more deals. Let him rot in hell.
You're gonna fry. We were like,
oh my God, yes.
Really? He's gonna be in the electric chair over this? Like selling some dime bags? And it's so bizarre.
You guys, it's just like Palermo got so mad out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's not like, even the guy with the gun. He's just the witness.
Oh, I thought it was the guy with the gun.
No.
Oh, so the witness. But the witness is in the gang with the drugs. Yeah.
And at this point, the attorney for the witness makes a really good point. He's like, oh, it seems like police brutality is sort of just a habit with this precinct. And I'm like, yeah, Anthony Palermo, you are not doing Corey any favors.
Yeah, that's not good, bud.
Losing your temp.
And for something that's so, you'd think out of your entire life of being a cop, you would think that you'd seen some pretty good things to really get your
like have some priorities.
Yeah. But this one small incident just gets your blood
Maybe because it's like they're trying to protect one of their own or something, yeah, which makes it even worse almost. But whatever. Point is, Corey's police inquiry fails miserably. She is not held responsible. She shot in good faith. He did have a gun. He was pulling it on her. She's free and clear.
And he was obviously involved in drugs, as we learned from this.
Well, and rapping. Oh, you know what? forgot. I know we keep saying we forgot stuff, but this is one of my favorite parts. Before they find out he has a gun, he gets out of the hospital because he's only been shot in the leg, mind you. TC tells Corey one day when they're on patrol, he says,
"You know, when they released Rashid from the hospital, he made a threat."
She's like,
"Let me guess, he's gonna kill me, my family, my dog, and my goldfish."
And he goes,
"He said he was gonna write a rap song about you after you were dead."
Oh, shit.
After you're dead.
Okay. So I was kind of right. We should just actually give the viewers a little listen to his rap real quick. Hold on.
"Ah, yeah. I'm the king with the ring, feeling fall is spring. I got a home with no loan, so don't take that tone. I make the bread with my head, Fred. Ah." "'Cause I'm wheeling and peeling, kid."
So all of you are probably thinking what we thought. Wow. This is a loss to the rap community. Wow. That he is now going
blown
to be in prison.
Away. Was I listening? Was that Jay-Z? Who was that? Dr. Dre?
It was.
What's going on?
It was N.W.A.
Crazy. So he did have talent, big talent.
Yeah, and that's all going to be in the Slammer now. Good job.
So Corey is just relieved. She knows her whole world is back to normal because she knows she did a good deed. All right, let's wrap up. Let's wrap up that, Corey.
Well, we just did. Corey's, in case you forgot, that's actually
that's right.
what we just did. So moving on, we will wrap up Del Toro and Chris's storyline, which is Del Toro gets cut out of the movie.
Because
I think it's Magruder, a passive-aggressive move by Magruder, yeah, because he let him get caught by a paparazzi.
"Talk to the hand. I don't really have time to.
Yeah, I just wonder how my scene looked.
Looked great. Shame we can't use it." "What do you mean you can't use it?"
Adding to our theory that Del Toro is homosexual and that there's a little bit of homoerotic tension is as they're leaving, Magruder is like, "You know what? This happens all the time. People get cut out of movies all the time." And then he gets Del Toro's hand or face in his hands and he says,
"You're on the cutting room floor, babe. So cute."
And then he does a gun.
A finger gun.
Which is, in the gay world, that is, you know, someone's into you if they finger gun you.
Well, I also know someone's into me if they finger gun me, if you know what I
mean. You're the worst. Such mom humor. I love it. Such spicy mom humor. So dumb. But guess what? Magruder left on Del Toro's desk after this interaction. He left the magazine cover where Del Toro is full humping him on the pool table.
So anyway, he finds the magazine and part of him is like, "Oh, that asshole." And the other part of him is like, "Oh, that asshole. I'm going to miss him."
Yeah, it's such a love-hate flirty, like when kids in school like used to like hit you and be like, "You're stupid and ugly," but they loved you.
Yeah, but that's never okay. That's what we're trying to teach the kids. Like, being mean is not the same as flirting.
Well, you know who I am. That's the only way I know how to flirt. But
I don't know how to flirt.
But
I love you.
I am ruthless.
We're kind of both ends of the spectrum. I have zero chill, and you're like so chilly. You're mean.
Yep.
That's how it works.
That's how it is. An old
put two of us together, maybe we can nail down a man.
What? What are you talking about? Like, actually, what are you talking about? You're married.
I was saying,
we have nailed down men before.
I was saying, like,
you're being bizarre.
If neither of us had partners, that between the two of us, maybe because we are on opposite ends of the spectrum, we could like get one guy to either love you or me with teamwork.
No, it would be, we blend our personalities together to create one fully formed human.
Right.
And then a...
But because we can't do that,
we're separate humans. I think the quality, like a really quality man... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure we can snag someone between the two of us. We're talking like a really quality,
that's true,
well-rounded, can successful, happy
man. Can we snag anyone?
Man.
Can we catch a dick? Yes, any old dick. But we're not talking about any old dick. We're talking about primo, top of the line D.
And we did on our own.
True. Barely.
That was a whole weird side note.
Barely.
So you know what? Let's forget about that. Let's go back to our show. We have to end it all. You're probably, if you're like me, extremely interested and on the edge of your seat of like, who is after Elvis?
Right. Because we've been making you wait this whole entire time.
Well, get this. They finally confront him in a very aggressive way. The three guys who have been following him on the men's bike ride together. Mm-hmm. Turns out.
Okay. The blonde guy. He's a Bulgarian national champion. Those other guys are his teammates. Elvis used to be their mechanic, but he left after a dispute over Tatiana.
Let me guess. She left Elvis for the racer.
No, the other way around. She left Zygmunt for Elvis.
Get out of here.
Yeah. A wild affair, and then she went back to her husband. Apparently, Elvis was something of a legend in the old country.
What are they doing here?
Well, they're pursuers. They race the 4,000 meters in the velodrome, but they're getting killed in the Olympic trials, and they want the mechanic back.
Elvis isn't leaving us, is he?
The pain is too great. He'll tune their bikes, but then he's going to send them on their way.
TC does a really good job of giving us a shit ton of exposition in about 30 seconds.
And
right?
As you heard, Elvis like swooned her and she left this guy for Elvis.
One of the cyclers who was like hot and in great shape and cycled. And she left him for Elvis.
And you guys... all is beautiful. Everyone's beautiful. Elvis is not someone in my book to write home about.
Then, because he's in the process of this whole conversation, he's actually fixing their bikes as we speak. Mm-hmm. So he soups up their bikes, does his thing. The woman watches as horny as ever from the sidelines.
She's flooding the floor.
And then they all pack up their bikes and fly them back home. Elvis. And Elvis stays at the station.
Elvis. And that wraps up the story for today.
It wraps it up.
It wraps it up the story for today. Don't you take off your bike helmet yet. Now we're diving into episode, what is it, six?
Episode six is called Takedown.
Takedown. And there's a lot of different things that can be taken down. And, you know, first off, I'd just like to state that we have some pretty big, low budget, big actors in here.
Okay, so there...
We don't know the appropriate word to say. Like, I used to say low budget, like... That means it's like the not the original. It's
like the poor man's version. Yeah, like that's like B. Yeah, like if you're gonna go to Colonel's Chicken, it's gonna be the poor man's Kentucky Fried Chicken type of a thing.
Colonel's Chicken is Kentucky Fried Chicken.
The no name. No, but I'm saying the official name. How sometimes it's just like one thing off, like Taco Hut. But not Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Oh, this is my favorite. Taco Hut. This is my favorite one. There's a restaurant in Crescent City called Apple Peddlers. It's like a little Applebee's.
Apple peddlers. Doesn't peddler mean like you're like wheeling and dealing apples?
It's like, yes, you're like a salesperson who has like an apple cart.
Hey, I'm an apple peddler.
And it's just such a like that's mouthful true. Of a name for a restaurant. There's a low budget James Franco.
Yes.
A low budget Steve Buscemi and a low budget Stephen Dorff. And that's going to be what we call our people. We know that's not who they are, who those actors are playing.
That you guys, it's not those actors. Let's be clear. But they look a lot like them.
What's the word? I'm blanking on the name. The like resemblance. Oh my God. Wow. Resemblance.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't know why that word would not come into my brain. I'm like, I know it. It's right there. The resemblance is uncanny. That is the phrase that I was looking for. The resemblance is uncanny. Instead, I went for like, it's big.
It's big.
Their same looks are big.
They look same big as other people.
Okay, so moving forward, that's our trio, and we are introduced to them from the get-go.
And they are no-nonsense, ragtag, full trench coats, long hair, shotguns. They go in, and basically this episode is about them just running this rampage, and there's, I guess, the pawn district.
Oh, yeah, they rob a pawn
Get
shop.
Get to the pawn dished. That's what the police say.
And the police are like,
got a 211 suspects on foot in the pawn district.
Guys, there's one pawn shop. Can we not call it the pawn district?
But they are in the pawn district just robbing stores left and right.
And it's like they are so... From moment one, they're out of place. They're in Venice Beach or wherever this beach is that we haven't quite nailed. Huntington, Venice, whatever. It's in the sun.
Huntingness.
They're in the sun, in the warmth, in the sand, and they're already completely out of place. They're wearing full-on leather trench coats, mm-hmm. head to toe, leather mm-hmm. vests under those trench coats, mm-hmm. and they're carrying full shotguns. Mm-hmm. Not little pistols, not little weapons, full shotguns. Middle of the day.
Very scary.
Same as... As per the usual, crimes are taking place at high noon. There's no other time to crime.
this episode focuses around their reign of terror, basically.
And it is a reign of terror. So in the beginning, it's just sort of silly. Like, they get called to the, quote, pawn district. TC and Del Toro respond. The robbers get away. And Del Toro ends up in a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
In the back, because they're trying to chase him through a back alley, he ends up in a dumpster, and they're like, oh, this, what a crazy shenanigan. But you know what? As the episode progresses, it's not such a crazy shenanigan then.
No,
and
it is
TC
not.
Will be the first to learn that hard lesson.
So we're back at the firehouse with our team. We got Palermo, Del Toro, Corey, Chris, and TC. And basically, Palermo's like, look, guys, this gang is way more serious than you think.
All right, we face two certainties. These guys are very dangerous and extreme. They don't care who they hurt or who sees them doing it.
Yeah, classic takedown robbers.
The division says it's our problem now. We own this case.
Do we have any positive IDs yet?
So far, VICAP's come up dry. No reliable witnesses.
What about the video camera at the store?
Nothing clean. They were quick to take out the surveillance cameras. We have to work up sketches. Now, these guys have pulled off three similar hits up the North Coast. Looks like they're targeting our area next.
I should add the guy.
Just remember, people, these are the same perps who killed a security guard up north 2 weeks ago and put a victim in the hospital yesterday.
And you know what? The division has told us it's our problem now.
It's only their problem. We have to solve this. No one else is coming in.
All four of us.
No other people are coming in to take care of these shotgun-wielding monsters. And they're saying, like, look, they killed someone in Northern California, and they're doing this, like, coastal tour of murder and rampage. And they're
and
like,
also just a really nice coastline tour. Just sightseeing.
You know, going down the water.
Little shotgun, little sightseeing.
A shotgun and sightseeing. It's like a new
SNS.
Yeah, a new caption on Instagram. Just SNS time.
So that's always going to be sort of like the main theme, like we just said through the episode. But what happens right after the meeting where they're assigned the only four people in the state of California to go after these robbers is Del Toro, there's like a magazine on someone's desk and it just sort of catches his eye, and that magazine is called Playtime.
And in this magazine...
I don't believe it.
What's the matter? One of them dressed?
No, this is Teresa Vanoni. My Teresa Vanoni.
Teresa, it says Tori Chambers.
So she's using a fake name.
It's not the only thing that's fake.
Hey, this is the girl that I took to the prom. I can't believe I dumped a centerfold.
You dated her? Invest in a shrink, Del Toro. They get paid to listen to delusionary man.
Hey, I'm not delusional. And listen to this. This is her fantasy. To reunite with the man who took me to the prom. The love of my life, so that I can give him the love now that I should have then. That's me.
I find it hard to believe you're the love of anyone's life.
Hey, I swear, those were her exact words on prom night.
Welcome to Fantasy Island.
I can't believe I dumped a centerfold.
He sees his old high school sweetheart that he took to prom.
Teresa.
And then he's like, oh my God, look at this. Her fantasy is to reunite with the man that took her to prom. And he is just now like, I have to go get this. It's been 20 years.
Yep. And he's like, I have to get back to this girl. She was my date. I'm not making this up. We're
I helped her
find
get ready.
Her.
I helped her pick her dress.
I did her makeup.
I got a corsage, told her exactly what colors went with
what. You do not understand. When I say I took her to prom, I said, girl, we are going to prom. Oh, I love Del Toro.
I do too.
And I love, even if it's make-believe, I love that he's closeted and he's just such a sass.
Yeah.
Love
so
him.
He's going to go on this journey with Corey to find this girl, because apparently they can go like to the office of where this Playtime is and find them.
It's super easy, which is a little unnerving because, yeah, Del Toro's a, quote, normal guy. But could you imagine a psycho just walking into the offices of Playtime being like, I need to find
so-and-so. My favorite thing, though, is he takes Corey along with him. They're in their police uniforms and they go to the place.
They go full on in their outfits,
but my
helmets, the whole shebang.
My favorite thing is that when you walk into, like, a Playtime magazine, like, it's like a corporation office, but there's, like, beautiful naked women everywhere. Because that's what happens when you walk to a corporate office. You know that, right? Like, if you post for Playboy, you just walk around constantly naked.
Like, if you go to a corporate office for, like, a restaurant chain, there's people cooking everywhere. There's food everywhere. It's, like, one big kitchen. Sort of like that.
If there's a corporation for, like, knives, like, everyone's having a knife. Knife shows going on all the time. Knives
they're
hanging around.
They're throwing knives. They're checking the weight distribution. Yeah, totally.
So it makes sense. So they go in their uniform, and they get to the big wig, and basically Del Toro's like,
look, I'm just here to get an address on one of your centerfolds.
You and 30 million other guys.
teach me to keep my door open.
No. You don't understand. Tori Chambers and I. Well, actually, she puts it best. I'm the love of her life.
Yeah, and I'm the Wizard of Oz I see in Kansas.
No. No, see, on her fantasy...
Look, I'm sorry I can't be your love connection officer, but this is publisher's policy. I can't give out these addresses, you know that.
He's like, dude, are you fegging crazy? Every guy says that. I can't give you this information. She's a model. That's against the rules.
He also says...
Now, if you don't mind, I'm up to my butt in, butts.
I'm up to my butt in butts.
He doesn't have time because he's up to his butt in butts.
In butts.
Like, he's got,
classic
he wears old, many hats. He wears
old
many hats.
Sleaze, man.
Oh, and just to increase his sleaze level, he does ask a Corey.
You ever model?
You mean pose nude? Not interested.
It's too bad. You're stunning. Besides, bio writes itself. Cop by day, dream girl by night. Can I get you an application?
What part of not interested did not sink in?
Mind if I ask your measurements?
Mind if I ask your IQ?
Which, if I'm Corey, I'd be like, you know what? That probably is not a bad paying job.
I'd do it. Cop by day, fantasy by night. He says it clearly. The bio writes itself.
She's really insulted by that. But in my opinion, the more empowered a woman is, the more she can choose the way she displays her sexuality. God. So for Corey to be so judgmental about this opportunity feels like very regressive to me.
But now, if I guess you don't want to be naked in the magazine that your coworker, your possibly gay coworker, has on his desk.
Oh, that's
then you
also
would
true.
Kind of find it. You'd be
if
like,
there's a playtime around the office and you know the playtime circulates, you maybe don't want to be in the playtime.
But makeup's a big deal. Just like kind of shadow out my face and just put very like different highlights. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking down.
Or put me in a wig.
but put me in a wig. I guess they completely change who you are. But it's
but you
for
know,
the body.
If you're getting paid for it, it don't matter.
And it's for your body, too.
Exactly. So, no one's looking at your face.
So he's doing that, and he's basically like, no, dude, I can't. I'm sorry, I can't help you. But Del Toro is
but
still
don't you worry.
On this. He still has to find this high school
sweetheart. He's not going to give up.
Right. So another cool thing that happens this episode is Chris. We get a little bit into Chris Kelly's life. She apparently has to go to night creative writing class for a detective training.
Yeah, she's like in a creative writing course and she's so irritated by it. She's like,
I'm not trying to be Jane Austen. I'm just trying to pass this course for a work requirement.
I just need to know so many more details.
And I think it's because she has to write up really creative police reports.
She was shimmering in the moonlight.
She was shimmering in agony as the perp got away.
The blood dripped slowly like syrup on a pancake.
I guess maybe in detective, you have a little bit more writing that you have to do.
Oh, for sure. And you want to love your job.
You want to love your job.
You want to take pride in your
job.
She's
not happy about going to the creative writing class.
You're right. She's not. She's not happy at all. And she keeps... So she's writing stories about a fictional police officer woman.
Yeah. It cuts to her in class. Cute teacher, by the way. Her teacher's
right.
This cute,
super
like,
cute.
Handsome 20-something-year-old man, and she reads out her story in front of the whole class.
Never since the dark and stormy day she'd left her small East Texas farm had Officer Lilith Beyer felt such a surge of emotional feelings. Peering inside the dusty windows of the paddy wagon, she anguished with pain as she watched the man of her dreams, a man for whom she'd do anything, be anything, a man she'd just put into handcuffs.
She would say anything, do anything, go anywhere. The same man she's putting into handcuffs.
Oh, yeah.
So the teacher afterwards meets with her and he's like, hey, I need to talk to you about your story, little girl, kiddo.
Little girl. He does not say little girl, but he says.
I was being TC from last time. Little lady.
He does meet with her and he's like.
Now, I believed Officer Bear. I felt her pain. And the police world that you created for her is very real. The prose
wasn't good enough for a B.
I'm sorry. I am looking forward to the rewrite, though.
I didn't
like,
love it.
I didn't love it. It's not the best. And she's like, oh, thanks. And he's like, yeah, so you didn't get a B even. And she's like, oh, that's cool. And then he asks her out.
That's how to get him.
Yeah, that's how to get him. He literally was like, yeah, wasn't that great? Kind of lackluster. You didn't even get a B. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But hey, do you want to go out with me sometime? And she's like, okay. You're cute.
You just insulted me, but okay.
Okay, I'll go out. So we're going to see a little romance.
We're going to check back in.
We're going to check back in with them.
It gets wild.
So now we're met with the three guys that we talked about at the beginning. The shotgun wielding
James Franco, Steve Buscemi, and Stephen Dorff, the trio.
And they're just wreaking havoc. They're going to liquor stores. They're getting money.
They move from the pawn district to the liquor district.
Yeah, to the liquor district. And they are just going on a rampage. And so we have Palermo, TC, and Chris. They're all there just kind of trying to track these guys down, but they can't
keep arriving right after. Yeah, so the guys will come in. They'll shoot out the security cameras. They'll threaten the guys. They'll steal some money. They haven't killed anyone here yet. They leave, and right after they walk out the back door, the three keep arriving. So they're just missing him. And then this last time they get called, they just miss him in the store, but they chase them up to the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, TC comes face to face with James Franco, and James Franco has a gun in his face.
Drop it.
No, can do, man.
Drop it now.
So TC drops his gun, and I think it's in an effort to just comply and be like, listen, nobody needs to shoot anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just cooler heads prevail. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, James Franco tells Stephen Dorff.
He's seen us. Do him.
And Stephen Dorff and TC are left face to face.
And so TC's kind of, they're doing a look down. And Stephen Dorff is like, they're looking.
They're looking down off the roof.
No, they're doing a stare down. You're right. And so they're looking. And what did you say? He looks like Steve Dorff.
Stephen Dorff.
I don't know quite Stephen who Stephen Dorff. Dorff is. But yeah, he's ready to shoot TC. And then he's like, I can't do it. Can't kill him. Jumps off.
But this stare down happens for a very extended period of time.
8 or 9 minutes.
And TC, and TC's lip is very curled that entire time.
Yeah, not a cute showdown face, And so he jumps off, and TC's left on the roof, and then the two other officers come up, Chris and Palermo, and they're like, TC, what happened? And he's like,
I think I'm gonna hurl.
Face to face with death, you guys.
And it was a very long, like we said, 8 to 9 minutes of staring down his mortality.
Exactly.
In Stephen Dorff's face.
I mean, I don't know about you, but that's going to kind of get in your head a little bit. It's going to kind of mess with you a little bit.
Yeah, we see it kind of start to work. You know what? And poor TC, because like two episodes ago, he also stared down mortality when he got thrown into the pool.
Oh, God, when those guys locked him in the pool.
How is he a functional human being? He has so much PTSD.
He does.
No one's living through the trauma that he's living through.
I know. He almost died. But this, because it's a gun maybe to his face, it like makes it more real. I don't know. Because he's died, almost died many times.
Right.
Well, not many, but a couple.
I mean, we don't know his history before this, but.
But he is. And you can see the rest of the episode. TC is just like, I cannot. He's falling apart. He's unraveling. Mm-hmm. Later on at a bar, they go to a bar and he gets TC drunk, which is basically
him just trying to juggle beer bottles and it not working.
And they're like, you're out of control. And he's like, I'm not drunk. And they're like, yeah, you are. But he's not doing anything.
He's not causing a ruckus. He's not hurting anybody.
No, he literally tried to juggle.
He tried to juggle. And they were like, I think you've had enough, TC. Back at the station, Chris is being wooed by her English teacher. And this brings out a really interesting conversation between Chris and Corey.
And I'm afraid if I tell him the truth, it'll just blow up in my face.
First to the female cop?
Yep.
They see blue.
And they run.
You too?
Yeah. I lived with this guy for 2 years who insisted he was okay with it. But little by little, it started to get to him. It's an unfortunate fact of police life that the male of the species hasn't evolved to the point of accepting a woman with a gun.
Tell me about it.
So you can't ever find a man who's strong enough or secure enough to date a police officer. And I'm just touching on that briefly because this becomes important in a couple scenes.
Well, my favorite thing is Corey gives Chris a bunch of really good information, which is my favorite. She's like, because these men will keep running away, she's literally like, if you find a breathing, alive man that will have sex with you and be in the same room with you, once you tell him you're a police officer, stay with him.
Stay with him. Go.
Do not let him go. So she's like, just settle if anyone says. Oh. So Chris is like, well, I have a problem being honest, so I have to tell him that I'm a cop. I have to get it out of the way early on, and I'm going to go meet him for a date, and I'm just going to explain it to him. Meanwhile, Corey's like, all right, me and Del Toro are still going to look for this woman.
We're going to use all our police resources to go find Del Toro's prom date.
Police officer time to go find his old porn prom date.
First, he tracks down her grandma and assaults her grandma at her home while on police time in his police uniform.
Hello. It's been a long time.
You look kind of familiar.
It's Victor. Victor Del Toro. Ow! What was that for?
Just a big shot prom date. Treated my granddaughter like yesterday's garbage and then has the nerve to come back here.
I was crazy about your granddaughter. But it was high school. Things happen. I'm a police officer now.
Dressed like that? I'd rather be mobbed than call you for help.
Miss Vanoni, please. I just want to talk to her. I thought you would know where I could find her.
So give it up. She's got a very nice boyfriend now. Dexter cares for her.
Dexter?
Dexter Pleasance. And he's no junior park ranger either. I can tell you that.
So that doesn't work. The grandmother slaps the shit out of Del Toro, as she should, because he's abusing his privileges as a police officer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of been intense at this time.
And at that point, he starts feeling a little discouraged, like maybe this isn't going to happen. And that's when the miracle happens. He gets to the beach. He returns back to, he's going back to headquarters with Corey. And there is a photo shoot happening on the sand.
A little playtime photo shoot going on.
Playtime and with playtime.
Guess who recognizes him?
Victor Del Toro! I can't believe it's you. Do you know how many times I've dreamed of you and I finding each other again?
I know. It's incredible.
It must be in the stars or something, because I've been thinking about you lately.
You have been on my mind too, believe me.
I want to catch you up on everything in my life. I guess I'm really into closure, and Lord knows lots has changed since high school.
Yeah. Let's get together.
Hey, it's meant to be, but guess who...
Guys, I about peed my pants.
We
on
did.
This.
Guess who plays Teresa, you guys?
I about peed my pants.
Jenna from Baywatch Hawaii.
Freaking Jenna.
And this is years before. This is like, mm-hmm. what? This is like 4 or 5 years before.
Right. It's about 5 years before, 96.
And she has the, you can't mistake that voice.
No, you
she
can't.
She has a very specific baby voice. And that's how we actually knew it was her, because it didn't look like her. We looked it up, found out it was her.
I immediately heard that voice, and I'm like, that's Jenna.
That's Jenna's voice. That's Jenna. It's hard to recognize her when she's not wearing her doctor's lab coat.
Oh, I know. When she doesn't look as sophisticated.
When she's not being doctor of the sea, PhD of the sea.
She, also, they did this really classic Baywatch move where when she sees Del Toro, she starts running towards him, and they put her in slow-mo running in a bikini.
Oh, it's she got a banging bod.
She is running full speed.
Beautiful
so anyway,
girl. Beautiful girl.
Here's woman. Where the dream comes true. She sees, you think it's all coming together for Del Toro. He's like, Teresa, she runs, hugs him. They twirl in the sand. He didn't care about the sand between his toes at that point. Mm. And he's so stoked. He thinks like, this is it. Lock and loaded. I'm going to be in the closet, but still be happily married to Teresa.
Still
going to
question my sexuality for a little bit.
And they set up a date for the following night.
We meet Chris back at her date. Yeah, they're at a bar. She tells him that she's a police officer at the bar. And he goes, yes. Hey, I'm a teacher. I can have a lot of fun. By the way, how's that paper going? Remember?
Yeah. He's like, just because I'm a teacher doesn't mean I can't let loose. But really, you're going to need to walk me through where you're at on the assignment.
She's like, I'm still trying to figure it out. And that's where she confesses to him that she is a police officer. But the story is
and
in
he
fact
says,
not about her.
He's, yeah, because he's trying to dig, and you don't realize this till a little bit later, but he's like...
So, have you finished rewriting Officer Bear?
Well, I'm actually not quite sure how to attack it.
You know her. She's very real to you.
No, she's just a character.
I think she's a little bit more than that. It was strange, because it was almost as if you'd been there and, like, seen through her eyes.
She's got lucky.
I don't think so.
So, you know, that story sounded really autobiographical. Is that by any chance true?
And she's like, no, it actually wasn't.
But.
Which is surprising.
I am a police officer.
But I am a police officer, and I have to tell you now, just to get out of the way. And he's like, I don't give a fuck. And he doesn't, we learn later, at all. So.
I got that confused with the next time they see each other, because what he does is he comes straight to the police station the next day. Well, first he's like, is your shift over? And she's like, yeah, I guess. Let me change. And I'm like, you guess or it is, because you can't yeah, just decide.
I guess it is.
Number one. And he says, no, don't change. Don't change. I have the perfect spot to go to watch the sunset. Just leave the way you are, which you're kind of like.
Just stay tuned.
Dot, dot, dot.
Because we're going to go meet Del Toro. We're going to get finish out what's going on with him, because he going on his date the next night, probably the same night that Chris and the teacher are going on a date. They're probably simultaneously.
Probably.
So he talks to this girl, Teresa, and she basically is like.
That?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, the PR people make all that stuff up. You know, it's all part of the fantasy thing for all the droolers out there.
Right.
You know the type.
Right. Yeah. I have a good idea.
I'm so glad you're not like them.
Guess what?
It's actually the producers who write all that. I had nothing to say about the prom.
So she didn't write any of that prom stuff.
She's like, she it's just what all those basic droolers want. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, those droolers. And those idiot droolers.
So you didn't really want to find the love of your life from prom? And she's like, no.
And she goes,
I've missed you, Victor.
I've missed you, too.
You know, I've always thought of our relationship as very special.
Oh, it should have been so much more. It still can be.
What's more special than true friendship? I mean, there's lots of guys you can give a body to, but so few you can trust with your heart.
Friendship?
Yeah, you know, like me and you. Buds for life.
Buds.
But you were my best friend, and you're still my best friend, and you're my bud for life. And she punches him. And
she basically,
guys,
like,
she knows he's in the closet.
Him. She launches him into friend zone. And that just reconfirms a little bit more, like,
she senses it.
That he's a little, she senses it. And it's, like, really funny because they really try to emphasize that she's like, you're my best friend. She, like, punches him, mm-hmm. elbows him, rustles his hair, mm-hmm. and just keeps saying he's, and Del Toro's, like, heartbroken, but he's trying to play it cool. Like, oh, yeah, I knew that.
Oh, buds. Okay, buds. Yeah, best friend necklace. We're good.
Sorry, Del Toro. She was hot, but just not meant to be.
Womp, womp. This is also where we see, we kind of talked about this last episode, that there are the gay tags and the straight tags, and
he's sound like he's a tags
tags, but he's wearing like a really fitted like olive green tank with like a really beautiful gold chain, not just a little one, you guys, like a really thick one, and he just
he's
looks
got his lip gloss
supreme.
On.
It's his tank is tucked into his tight pants. His hair is perfectly coiffed. Compare this with TC, who just looks like a slob in his giant tanks and his ruffled hair. He doesn't care.
It's just definitely a contrast, for sure. Mm-hmm. Very metro. Remember metrosexual?
Oh, metrosexual. Why did we say that?
This was like, yeah, that just came and went.
It really did. It was so lame, too, like as if...
A guy can't take care of himself.
Yes, that it immediately means they're gay.
Well, no, metro doesn't mean gay. Or
I guess... The idea is that they're less masculine somehow because you're veering in towards, you're talking about like homosexual, metrosexual, like it's almost a different kind of sexuality to take care of the way you look.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because you take care of the way you look.
Right.
Which is unheard of in the straight world. You just don't do that, right? No one. Like,
you just
it's like
put
so
on those cargo pants.
On those cargo
pants.
Those
Tevas. My head right out.
so stupid. But yeah,
and that B cap.
So unfortunately, Del Toro, sorry, bud, you're going to have to get back to work and find the next one. And so we're just going to check in with TC. He's still unraveling, you guys. Things are going really bad.
And Palermo notices this because he says, you know, like, it's not a small thing to stare down your mortality. It happens to all of us. And to avoid it is just going to make it a whole lot worse in the end. Do you want to talk to a shrink? Do you want to talk to me? Like, how can we best work this out? And TC's being super masculine.
He's
like,
doing that whole, like, it doesn't matter. I'm fine. I'm fine. And everyone's like, no, you're not. Just take a few days off.
Yeah. Palermo's like, you literally can take a vacation. It's okay if you need to process this. And he's like, nope.
Cadence and I were talking about this. Like, if my boss came up to me and was like, hey, you need to take a few days off, I'd be like, okay.
Okay, perfect. Good. I will see you in a few days.
Bye.
And it wouldn't even be, even if I didn't need to process it, even if I truly wasn't upset about it or whatever, I'd still be like, you know what? No, I'm okay. Yeah. I definitely need a vacation. You know, you're what? Right. You're totally right. I'll see you in a couple days. Bye.
So he's still dealing with this and it's sad and Palermo's trying to help him, but we definitely know TC's got some things to work out. Regardless, we meet up with Chris.
Okay.
And her date.
This is my favorite thing Ooh-wee. That has ever happened, Ooh-wee. Ever, ever, ever. So they're at his special spot that they went to after he picked her up at the fire station. Mm-hmm. It's his house, by the way.
Yep.
It's right in front of his fireplace, by the way.
Which is lit.
And it's his fire's going. He's got a globe and a stack of books by his fireplace because he's a teacher.
He's a teacher, yes.
So you gotta know. When he's lounging by the fire, he's learning.
Every teacher has a globe and pile of books wherever you go.
Lounge and learn. That's what I say. Lounge and learn. So they start kissing. Okay. She lays down on the ground. He lays on top of her. He starts nuzzling her police badge.
Not nuzzling
and
it.
And then he licks
it. He starts licking her police bag like a little dog. Licking her police badge, nuzzling her, getting really intense. Oh, and she's God. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, no, stop. And he keeps like doing and it. And she's he... like, then he pulls out her gun saddle thing, her police tool belt. It's like a police tool belt. Yeah. It's like a fanny pack with her gun and everything. And he's like, put this on. And she's like, no, come on. And he like puts it on her and he's like, no, put it on. And she's like, what are you doing? Then he continues to get very forceful with
her. He's like, put it on.
And he's like licking her badge and putting it on and getting, and then she's like,
get off me.
I said get off. What the hell is wrong with you?
Like, get off of me.
And she knees him in the balls.
Knees him in the balls. He falls off and he's like,
I just like lady cops.
You are sick.
Okay, let's break this down.
I can't handle it.
It's okay to fetishize someone, maybe, but just communicate with her.
We had a big discussion about this, yeah.
Communicate. Be like, hey, I think you're a great person. You're beautiful. You're a cop. I love all parts of you. But guess what? I get really turned on by a cop uniform.
Do you want to role play?
Yeah, like any time. Or not even role play. I just let you know that I get really turned on. Because then the licking the badge could be realistically a little more understandable.
9 times out of 10, if someone's like, when you do A, B, C, it turns me on. The person's going to do A, B, and C for you as a favor.
Yeah. So we're just like, why? This could have all been avoided if you would have just communicated a little bit
instead of just forcing that goddamn belt on her.
And then you find out that he's just, yeah, he's like, cops are my thing, it's a fetish, I want to be. When you talked about handcuffing that guy, mm-hmm. and your story,
which
and,
okay, ooh, great, let's handcuff, yes, each other, more power to you. Just say it.
Like, if I'm gonna start making out with someone that I'm just getting to know, I'm not gonna force my fetish on them without telling them and then get mad when they're, yes, like, what are you doing?
Yes.
And then I'm gonna be like, oh, by like the way,
they should understand it.
Yeah, by the way, I love doing A, B, and C. And it's like, no, you talked to me about this beforehand.
Yeah, clarify the rules. Yeah. Communicate effectively, participate in a consensual situation, yeah,
and then
we're good to go.
We all know anytime it's no is no, so that he should have stopped, right? Because it goes into that realm, yes, of he's so turned on that now he's being like very rapey, and that's, yes, just not right. So this could have been avoided at so many different levels.
It was a problem that so easily did not need to be a problem.
But he just didn't. So she's like, I'm done with you.
Not very smart for a teacher.
Not very smart
for a teacher. Needs to learn a thing or
two. Boom. She elbows him and she's like, I'm never going to your class.
She gets the hell out of there.
So we wrap up this episode with TC.
This is the climax. This is
the big showdown, you guys. The three...
Yeah, James Franco, Stephen Dorff, and Steve Buscemi.
This is the big one. They're robbing a big full-on grocery store. They've updated from pawn stores, mm-hmm, to liquor stores. Now they're doing full-on Whole Foods grocery stores, mm-hmm, y'all.
Just blowing people away. They're in the organic district.
And this is where, because the squad, the five people, it's their, mm-hmm, responsibility. Remember, it was put on them.
Right, so this is also where we see that very clearly, because they've shot up the store. They've evacuated every single, mm-hmm, customer, mm-hmm, save for one little girl who's lost in the store, which we'll go back to her. There are dozens of what they call black and whites outside.
The four-wheelers.
The four-wheelers, right? Dozens have responded. They are quarantining off the whole entire area. The only four people in charge of disarming these shotgun-wielding maniacs
are the bike squads.
Every other cop there, every other black and white has a bulletproof vest on.
Yeah, they like practically SWAT team. Body armor. No, these guys that are literally wearing biker shorts, their spandex bike shorts, and their polo police tops are responsible for taking down these three gunmen. And
the division, it's not the division's problem. Yep. The division said it's you guys. It's
their division. They got to do it. So basically, this little girl that's left in the store, it becomes this big hostage situation. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the more intense scenes we've seen from Pacific
Blue. It really is. Because
things actually start getting really, mm-hmm, real.
At one point, Palermo gets shot.
Palermo does get shot in the chest.
Well, who gets shot?
Palermo. Palermo shot. He's bleeding. He's like, ugh, I'm in pain air mode.
I hate that you made that joke, but it was good. It was
and good. TC, the climax of this episode is TC comes face to face
with Stephen Dorff, who held a gun to his face.
Yeah, the guy that was supposed to kill him but didn't, chose not to. And this, during this time that TC's also, been...
we see TC, it takes all of his bicep muscles to hold his little baby gun, yeah, up.
I don't know if you guys know this, but when you hold guns, you have to flex every muscle.
Because he's full on.
He's doing that classic, like, I've got the gun in front of me, mm-hmm, the L shape, the classic L.
Right.
The unit okay, one and unit two.
He's got both of his big units on that, and one
he's
gun.
Like holding it, and he's just like, and so his, yeah, that's just a side note. You have to always flex
it's so
as
good
much as you can. But he comes face to face with him. This whole time, we think that TC is going through his thing, but what he's been doing is getting in the mind of this
Stephen
guy.
Dorff.
He's like, you tried to kill me, but guess what? I know everything about you.
So they're like in another standoff. Mm-hmm. And he even says to him,
look, this may seem bizarre, but I never got a chance to thank you for not, well, you know, shooting me the other day.
It's okay.
I don't know why you didn't shoot. I'm thinking maybe it's because you were scared as I was. Scared as I am now.
It wasn't supposed to be like this. I didn't know how I got here. Doing this.
I don't know how it all works any more than you do. But I do know I don't want to kill you. And I sure as hell hope you still don't want to kill me.
And you know what? I just want to say while we're here, thanks for not shooting me the first time.
Yeah.
It seems like you're just as scared as I am, and we're all in this together.
But he does say something that's really, really true.
What's that?
He says,
you gotta figure that a little bit of time in jail is better than a lot of time dead.
It makes more sense to be in prison for a little bit of time than be dead for a long time.
And I totally forgot. I even pointed that quote out and I completely forgot about it. What?
The guy's like, that's true. I don't want to be dead for a long time. Your logic is sound. I don't want to be dead for a long time. I think I'd rather be in prison for a short time. Sound logic, TC.
I've weighed out the possibilities.
He's like going through. He's like doing up pros and cons. Dead in the ground, long time.
Takes a moment.
Prison, alive, short time. Okay, I think. Okay, let me just run through it one more time. So TC does play mind games with him, and at the end of the day, he gets him to subside, and they do not shoot him. Or the TC does not get shot. They collect those four guys.
Yeah, because Palermo is definitely still shot. Yeah, so Palermo's there was like, one guy down.
He was one guy down. And the little girl gets saved and they bring down the perps. They bring the perps down.
And you know what? The division thought that they were pawning them off, but they did. They did not know what they were in for with those bike cops.
Good thing. All those black and whites got to see our bike cops in action.
Yeah.
So now they're probably
I really hope there's no more class warfare now. They've actually seen them do their thing. And they're going to be like, you know what? We've been talking shit about you and we're sorry.
But four of you.
Four of you did a job that a whole district could not do.
Yeah. Now there should be, like, remember that time we single-handedly disarmed those five guys with shotguns that were killing people in a grocery store with a hostage situation?
They're going to be like the guy who created Baywatch. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you disarm three shotgun maniacs like in a grocery store? They have
their medals of honor. They're always just valor. Excuse me. He had shotguns.
I'm sorry. And then the very last part of the episode is, you know, like Colin said, they finally take down these robbers and we're back at the police station. Palermo's all bandaged up. He's been treated for his gunshot wound. He's fine. And the very last scene is TC pokes his little head in, his little luscious head of butt crack 90s hair. And he's like, hey, Palermo.
I'm ready for that talk now. Have a seat.
Oh, he's ready to open up.
And then credits roll.
He's ready to open up. That's so sad. TC, good for you. He's growing too. See, we're all growing. Except for Del Toro, who didn't get much of anything. He's growing.
Del Toro.
He's growing towards the gay side. I was trying to say he's growing more towards almost sad. Come to us, Del Toro.
Come to us.
He's so cute. You should come to us, Del Toro.
Oh, also, when we were talking about TC's logic about short time versus long time.
You're still thinking about that.
Well, because it reminds me of one of my favorite things I've ever seen in my life. When Jed and I were dating, we went to Las Vegas to take his brother to the airport. And at the time, do you remember that show, Buffy? There was like Angel that came out after. It was like a spinoff. He was on everything, and all the taxi cabs at the time in Las Vegas had, like, they were pushing that publicity like crazy, and on all the taxi cabs they had promos for it, and the tagline was live fast, die never.
Well, then that's an exhausting life. I need to take a nap.
Go,
never dying. I need to take a nap. Rest.
We still.
I don't want to live fast and die never.
This day, and it's been so many years.
I want to live slow and happily and die at
and die at
age.
My time.
Yes. Exhausting to think about.
Go.
Never ending.
Your to-do list never ends and you never die.
It's great. Sounds great. Cool tagline.
Have fun, Angel.
Well, we'll join you next time for this. Keep this story going. Keep in touch, guys.
Listen fast. Die never.
Listen fast and... Yeah, you see what she
Listen
said.
Listen forever.
Bye.
Bye. I'm a two-wheeler. You're a turkey. Let's cook this Thanksgiving dinner. I don't know what I thought was going to happen with that.
It's getting late. We don't
really
know.
It felt like it was going to come to me. I felt like it was going somewhere.
I know.
I
saw you searching for it on my NPR side eye.
So
she's a grown woman with her kids.
Okay. He's like 20 something. Okay. He's legal.
He's 19.
No, he's. I looked it up just so I wouldn't feel like a perv when he was on SNL. Because my kids also made fun of me. No, he's over 21 by far. I think he's like 25.
He looks like an Italian shoe brought to life, a designer Italian shoe brought to life.
I would wear the hell out of that shoe. Mm-hmm. I would wear the hell out of
it. I don't see it. Very handsome. Don't see it.
I think I never felt further away from you as a sibling than I do right now.
Don't see it.
Can't believe you don't see it, but whatever. So, moving forward. I'm so sorry, fingering's on my mind because I saw this article the other day and it was like this woman on TikTok was trying to show how gently she was using an egg yolk as like a visual representation. She was like, don't break the yolk. Don't break the yolk. Not enough guys are taught how to finger properly. And so she was
using an egg yolk?
So she was using an egg yolk as a visual.
That's very delicate.
Well, do you have a lady part?
I don't think so.
Then you don't know.
You're right.
Then you don't know. Do you have an egg yolk?
All right, kiddo.
Then you don't know. The similarities. What is it called?
Their characteristics?
I am thinking of a very specific word.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's quite big. And so we're like...
I don't know what you're... What is quite big? Where are you going with this? This isn't making any sense. You're just stumbling over your words, and then you're like, it's all just so big. All of it. The world is just bigger than us.